You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where, in the words of Bill Burr, fuck you and your group. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and if you have a friend who also is sick of fucking groups the way I am, send them to the midside. Not to join our group. No, we're not looking for anyone to join our group here. We're just looking to commiserate together. And if you enjoy the commiseration, you can support us at patreon.com/themidside or themidside.com/patreon. That is per episode. It's not a monthly subscription or weekly or anything. It's per episode. So we don't make content. You don't give us money. It's pretty nice. You can also, if you hate our content, stop giving us money. It's pretty cool. Joining me, I guess us, because we're all in this together, not as a group, as individuals. Joining us this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Yo, yo, yo. What's up, my homies?
That got a little weird. Also joining us.
I thought I would try that out.
It got a little racial there, Daniel. Are you culturally appropriating?
That is 2 weeks in a row where James is coming hot with the racist stuff.
I know. I thought I would do something new, you know, something not me, something fresh, something, you know, to keep it lively here at the midside, something to keep it, you know, something more, a little more relatable for the urban audiences. Well, our demographic data showed that we were skewing 100% white male, so I thought I would try to, you know, something. You know, Black Panther is out and it's all the rage, so I thought I would, I'm trying to, you know, there's, you know.
I was going to say, maybe you could say you know one more time. I'm trying to sidestep the Black Panther debate, and I'm going to sidestep it into the hills of white privilege with James Elias.
Thanks for having me, Justin, and thank you for appealing to our urban audiences, Daniel.
It's very important that we're diverse here at the midside.
Yeah.
Well, now that we've invited them all in, they're probably going to get angry with us. So let's just move on to pissing them all off. They're not going to. If anyone's rational, you'll be as angry as I am during the news. It's time for the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, isn't just a fad.
Of course, we can't do the news without discussing the shooting in Parkland, Florida by one dumbass idiot face.
Nope. Yeah, I was going to. Okay, thank you for not saying his name.
Have I ever said the name of a shooter on this show?
No, Justin? But you've
How
all.
Have we done this show?
You've never, but you've also never set up by and then lit a long pause, and I was like, don't do it. Don't do it.
I was trying to come up with a name that I could say that wasn't remarkably vulgar.
Shithead? I know, you can't swear.
There are a lot of hot takes on this issue, of course, be it we need to ban all guns, or be it that all teachers need to have assault tanks in the classroom, or basically everything in between those two things. And we were, in fact, only going to talk about this issue at the top of the show before the news, but then the FBI released a statement on the shooting in Parkland that I thought required us to respond. So the statement goes a little bit something like this. On January 5th, 2018, a person close to dumbass idiot face contacted the FBI's public access line to report concerns about him. The caller provided information about idiot face's gun ownership, a desire to kill people, erratic behavior, and disturbing social media posts, as well as the potential of him conducting a school shooting. Under established protocols, the information provided by the caller should have been assessed as a potential threat to life. The information then should have been forwarded to the FBI Miami field office, where appropriate investigative steps would have been taken. We have determined that these protocols were not followed. were the information received on January 5th. The information was not provided to the Miami field office, and no further investigation was conducted at this time. FBI Director Christopher Wren said, "We are still investigating the facts. I'm committed to getting to the bottom of what happened in this particular matter, as well as reviewing our processes for responding to information that we receive from the public. It's up to all Americans to be vigilant. And when members of the public contact us with concerns, we must act properly and quickly." Justin, on a scale of 1 to Bostonian, how angry does this press release make you?
I mean, this is like angrier than the Boston Tea Party, Bostonian angry. That's how angry this makes me.
Yes.
Like, this is, oh my God, you had one job, government. You had one job. So we, you know, we talk a lot on here, and we're co-broadcasted, or what are we? I can't remember the fucking word because I'm so
syndicated.
Angry.
Right?
Syndicated. Thank you. We're syndicated on liberty.me. So like we're like very anti-government. We want small government, but there is one legitimate purpose of government, and that is to protect its citizens from threats. That is the purpose of the police. That is the purpose of law enforcement. And, you know, everyone's going on and on about gun control, blah, 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 this and that. And if he didn't have guns, he wouldn't have killed people. If the FBI did its job, he wouldn't have killed people. This has revealed something that is going on in this fucking country that no one wants to talk about. The people who are in charge of protecting us are more worried about controlling us than they are protecting us, and it's fucking us all over. Everyone wants to know why all this shit is happening. We now know why all this shit is happening. We're growing the size of government, and all that is doing is putting incompetent people in power, and it's fucking us all over. And if you don't believe that that is the issue, fuck you. That's all there is to say anymore. This is one of the most offensive things I've heard over my entire lifespan, and I do not say that lightly. The idea that this guy went in, and there are 17 people dead. This guy went into a high school where everyone said, well, if there's somebody who's going to do it, it's that guy. I didn't have anyone in my high school where we were like, if there's somebody who's going to kill people, it's that guy. There was no one we knew who was conceivable that they could have killed people. So people knew this guy was a threat. He was reported to the FBI multiple times, and he still killed 17 people. Those 17 people are on the consciences of all the fucking people in the FBI who fucked this up and in the government who fucked this up. We're going to sit here and we're going to say guns are the issue. How are guns the issue when you can't even fucking properly make the law? It doesn't matter if you have a law if it's unenforced. If you say thou shalt not kill, you say it's illegal to murder, and then every murderer is just walking around the streets, are we really going to blame everything else in the world when the law isn't working? That is what's going on right now. It is fucking atrocious. If I had kids, I would not send them to school, because now the rules are being used to make them unsafe. So the rules that were supposed to make them safe, like a gun-free zone, and this is where they all are, and they're all protected, and we keep them here at this time of day, it's supposed to make them better people. It's now making them worse. It's making them stupid, and it's making them, now they're physically threatened. There is no reason to send a kid to school anymore. All you're doing is making their life worse. It's fucking terrifying to me. It's terrifying. I went from really, really sad that this happened to just fucking angry. This is the worst of all to me, because this truth is revealed. And I have to wonder, if we look back at all the other ones that happened, you're going to tell me that fucking crazy guy who shot up Vegas, there was no report of him to anyone? Likewise, wasn't there a report on the Orlando guy, Daniel? Wasn't there information given to the FBI on him too?
I don't remember, and I don't want to say false information, but it seems to ring true that I remember in our discussion of that there was at least some report that he was going to harm someone.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily this specific.
Right. I don't know how specific it was or anything, but it seems crazy to me that we've got these people that are fucked up mentally and people know they're a threat and they're not reported. It seems more likely to me that they are reported, especially with this piece of information, that they are reported and nothing is done with it. Look, I am all for, and this is probably the most, you know, controversial thing I'll say for libertarians and maybe my co-host, I'm all for saying people with mental health issues can't have guns, depending on what the issues are, you know? If someone psychologically, if someone is a threat and erratic, they should not be able, there should be background checks like that. I'm all for that. Especially if the fucking government, the law enforcement, can't do its fucking job. And explain to me this. If now I know the law enforcement can't do its job, why the fuck am I going to respect gun licensing laws if I'm a teacher? My immediate thought was, well, if I ever teach, and now I probably can never get a teaching job because of what I'm about to say, why would I not have a safe in my classroom that only I know the combination for with a gun in there? Why isn't that the only rational thing right now because law enforcement can't do its job? It's just fucked up. We cannot trust the one job. Government is more concerned with taking our fucking tax money than they are with protecting our children. Do we realize how fucked up that is? I sound like a fucking crazy wackadoo right now, but that's how insane our society is right now. They're more concerned. They're better at taking our taxes and punishing us if we don't than they are with protecting children. We're more concerned with putting Wesley Snipes in jail for tax evasion than we are protecting our children.
They're better at protecting the habitat of the sage grouse than they are at preventing school shootings. The things that we choose to care about in the government these days defies belief. They're better at I watched a video recently of a company that tried to start plane sharing, essentially Uber for the skies, and the government was better at hunting them out, deciding that they were illegal, and shutting them down than they were at following up on the school shooting.
Yes. Fuck, that's the what FAA I want to do.
Decided. Nope. Unsafe. Completely unsafe. So, go away.
You know what else is unsafe? A crazy guy who wants to kill people having guns and preparing to kill people. That's what else is unsafe. It's just fucking...
Yeah.
It just goes to show this is an example of bad ideas driving out the good. When you start prioritizing all these other things, then, you know, a legitimate investigation, such as like investigating a person you have probable cause should, you know, might commit a crime, takes the back burner or doesn't get as much prioritization as it should, which is fucking all of the prioritization. That's the only, you had one job, you know, as Daniel is saying, this is their one job. This is their one time they should ever be sort of taking preemptive action, is when you have probable cause to believe someone will commit a major crime, you investigate them. You are allowed to do that preemptively.
James, I agree. But
their priorities aren't in line with that.
Right, and I agree 1,000%. And Daniel, to quote Adam Carolla, because we are the Chinese knockoff of Adam Carolla, there has never been a better time to be an actual racist. There has never been a better time to be an actual murdering psychopath. Why? Because to build off of what James is saying, we can no longer distinguish between what is actually threatening and what is harmless. Because we have this idea of privilege and patriarchy and this idea of the Me Too movement, where Aziz Ansari is as threatening as Harvey Weinstein. We can no longer distinguish between those two. So there's no better time to be a Harvey Weinstein. There's no better time to be an idiot fuckface or whatever you called him. Because we can't distinguish between the two, so you're more likely to get away with it because we're wasting our energy talking shit about Aziz Ansari than we are protecting against the people who are actual threats.
Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs over here in Washington, D.C., basically, if there was any first principle of what government should do, that's all gone. We have a lot of nonsense the government does, and it does it fairly well, you'd be surprised. But in terms of actually thinking about what is the purpose of a government, what do we want it to do at its fundamental core, what is it that we as a society come together and actually start a government to do, there's literally no thinking about that whatsoever. None. It never comes up. It has never come up as long as I've lived in this town. It is basically, if you were to say something like that, like what is the purpose of government, people would look at you like you had 9 heads. They would be like, well,
God, if that doesn't fucking say something, I don't know what does.
Yeah, it's and to bring up that kind of stuff, you just get immediately clumped in this fringe tinfoil hat wearing, anti-government nonsense group over here, and the adults over here are just going to talk about around the edges whether or not government should take some guns or all guns.
That's a great point. Like out of some of the. Yeah, like out of one of the Socratic dialogues where Socrates goes up to Euthyphro, the lawyer, who's like, oh, I'm going to go out and do this prosecution. And then Socrates is like, yeah, but like, you know, what is justice? And Euthyphro is like, oh, well, that's easy. Like, that's trivial. And then he gives an answer. And then Socrates asks him a few questions. And then they end up going around in circles. And then Euthyphro ends up contradicting himself. And then Socrates is like, but doesn't that go against what you said at first? And then Euthyphro is like, you know what, Socrates, this has been great, but I got to, clip my toenails. This has been great. Like, Daniel, this has been great, but I need to go back to doing all of these functions that I haven't thought about and don't bother to prove whether we should keep doing this as a government.
Well, right. And that's why I feel fucking crazy. And that's why I said I sound like a wackadoo, because I hate the fact that I'm made to feel crazy for having thoughts like, what was that animal you named, Daniel? The grouse or whatever?
The sage grouse.
Sage grouse or whatever. What is that? What is a sage grouse? Is that an animal? Is that a plant? I don't even fucking know.
I think it's a ground dwelling bird in North Dakota that the government has basically been stopping various oil and gas activities to save its habitat.
Okay. So the sage grouse.
Complete nonsense. Yes.
Right. And this is the federal government?
Yeah.
Okay. So I hate the fact that I feel crazy like a fringe outlier, like you're saying, Daniel, when I say the parents in Parkland, Florida paid more money to protect the sage grouse than they did their own children. That is a true fact. And the fact that I'm made to feel crazy for having that thought is fucking insane. Fuck you.
That's right. They paid more money for us to declare any puddle of water in the United States in navigable water to be regulated by the federal government than they did for the FBI to protect their own children.
It's insane. It is insane.
The government has spent literally more time thinking about if they can regulate puddles than investigating this potential shooting. Let that sink in for a moment while we move on to other crazy things. All right. So it's the Olympics, at least, the soft Olympics, the Winter Olympics, the methadone of Olympics to wait for the actual Olympics. But nonetheless, there are some cool events like snowboarding, and Shaun White proved in epic fashion this year that he was the best of the best of the best of the best, basically winning Olympic gold on a final run that, Justin, I think it was like a nearly perfect score.
Yeah, it was like 97.5 out of 100. And what happened was he was in first, then two other dudes beat him and were in first, and he had the final run of the event. And he did it and got a 97.5 out of 100, which is insane. Because his previous score was like 95.
Yeah, it's insane. It's human achievement at its finest in many ways. And of course, USA Today Sports has an article about Shaun White titled, "As Shaun White Cements His Legacy, Why So Little Attention Paid to Sexual Harassment Allegations?" Right? Because that's what's important, clearly, here. So, Shaun White is an American cultural institution, the article continues, winning the third Olympic gold medal of his pioneering career. But while we glorify him as an all-American athlete, consider this. I like that. While we uphold him for all this virtuous stuff that he's done as an icon, by the way, he's flawed. That's what the article said. And so here it is. In August 2016, Lena Zoeda, the drummer in his band Bad Things, filed an amended complaint to a civil suit in San Diego, alleging White had sexually harassed her, sending, quote, sexually explicit and graphic images to her, text messages White later admitted to sending. In February 2017, White requested that the San Diego Superior Court require Zoeda to undergo a mental health evaluation, but 3 months later, they reached an undisclosed settlement. And the article continues, as White took his bows Wednesday, cementing his place in Olympic history, I had a question. Why in the world aren't we talking about this? I'm going to read that one more time. As White took his bows Wednesday, cementing his place in Olympic history, I had a question. As he was bowing, I had a question. Why in the world aren't we talking about this? In the midst of the Me Too movement, how has white somehow flown under the radar? Justin, when you're watching Tom Brady throw for 505 yards in the Super Bowl and 3 touchdowns, as he's throwing his 505th yard, are you thinking, why aren't we talking about Spygate?
No,
is that what you're thinking?
No, I'm thinking in the air. I wonder what positions he and Giselle used during sex last night. That's what I'm thinking whenever he throws the ball. Like, as the ball's in the air and I'm just, like, waiting, because there's, like, that second of time where you're waiting before it gets to the wide receiver, like, when Cooks is just waiting for it, and I'm like, man, I wonder what positions they used. Oh, Cooks caught it! Go, go, go! That's, like, where my thought goes in the middle. Like, I can't stay focused on anything anymore. I just always have to think about, like, how
Tom
the
Brady's
man...
sex life.
Any man, I have to think about any man in the middle of what he's doing when there's that pause. Immediately I go to, like, what are they doing sexually? Like, that's immediately what, yes, I go to. It's just, it's insane.
That's right.
I mean, this is
right.
I was talking about last story. Why is he flown under the radar? Because we don't have to compare Shaun White to Harvey Weinstein. The context isn't even the same. Okay, so he's in a rock band with someone. Forget the gender of the person, right? We want to say all genders are equal, right? He's in a rock band with the person. He's talking to that person about that person's sex life and asking if the sex life is good or not and what that person does in the sex life. Then for some reason, I don't understand the reason. I don't want to know the reason. But for some reason, he's sending pictures of other people's dicks to this person. Now, I'm not saying that's reasonable, but there are a lot of shit that other dudes do that I don't understand. I could see, for some reason, a dude doing that, texting pictures to of other people's dicks to another dude in his band. I don't know why. This is like the whole, was the Adam Carolla thing when he was young? They used to piss on each other?
Yes.
Yeah, explain that a little bit. What was it? They pissed on each other? How was that?
They would just use their urine as a weapon against each other in their friendship bullying.
Yeah, I don't understand. I don't understand that. Never in my life was, yes, when I was in grad school and I met Dana, I was like, you know, I really like this dude. I should piss on him. Like, I don't think that way, but that doesn't mean other people don't think that way. Adam Carolla is a reasonable person and he participated in this pissing each other thing. So there's nothing that Shaun White did that to me is anywhere near anything that Harvey Weinstein did. But yet in the moment of his greatest accomplishment of his life, this is like we said, Tom Brady in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. If immediately after a press conference is like, hey, Tom, I know you did really well in that drive there, but has Giselle ever not wanted to have sex with you and you made her have sex with you? Like, has she ever have a headache and you pressured her into having sex? Like, that's what that's like. Like, why is that what's on your mind? Especially when this was settled out of court. If this is settled out of court or settled out of trial, however the fuck you say it, I don't know. That means the woman who was doing the accusation was like, you know what? This is enough. I don't need this. The justice is served if he pays me. So if the victim is saying justice has been served, why the fuck do we have to focus on it? Because we don't know what real threats are anymore, and we can't celebrate greatness. It's so fucked up.
Yeah, we have to. I mean, is there an icon or anyone who goes unscathed anymore? I mean, that's sort of the inverse of the question that they're asking, right? Which is like, why aren't we talking about these bad things? I have the inverse question, which is, are we allowed to have heroes anymore, or must we find something horrible about everyone who does something good as a culture? Because we are just a culture awash with envy, and that envy has destroyed any sense of pride and self that we have, and our only mechanism for achieving any sort of semblance of what used to be called self-esteem is to bring other people down.
Our only mechanism for evaluating these things has been so damaged by public school style thinking that we're no longer able to view events like this in essentials. We're unable to put it in perspective at all. So as a result, like, just whenever someone's like, oh, but what about, you know, this, or like, you know, the classic example of this is, you know, Jefferson did all these good things. Oh, but he owned slaves. Okay, well, you know, forget about all those good things he did then. You know, like, I guess, fuck it, you know. Socrates was fucking little boys, so I guess we should stop reading him, too.
It's concrete-bound thinking is what it is. It's, oh, own slaves equals bad, therefore bad person. It's not looking at context. It's not looking at Jefferson's statement where Jefferson said, slavery is a battle for the next generation because I can't fucking solve everything because I'm one human being. It's concrete bound thinking. It's the same thing. Oh, you say sexual misconduct, sexual harassment. Oh, well, immediately, concretely, that Sean White is as bad as Harvey Weinstein. That's what it is. It's concrete bound thinking, James. You're 100% that's what the public school does. It does not teach people to think abstractly, like you're saying, in principles. It's fucking insane.
Yeah.
This will continue in our last article, and right?
It makes you... It's the ultimate thing that allows you to just kind of be convinced by any argument that sort of already goes with your gut. And unfortunately, the guts of most people are on the side of these leftists. So it gives them, by attacking the mind, and you're going to necessarily upraise the gut. And so you never question it. And the gut is already on their side. So it's like, I'm already kind of a little pissed off at this guy for being an achiever. So I guess I'm not surprised that it turns out he's a douchebag.
Right. And Daniel, that kind of goes to answer your question right very quickly before we move on to the next story. That answers your question about who is allowed to achieve. It's the oppressed. Whoever's been labeled concretely oppressed is who can achieve. Look at it like the last Super Bowl, right? The Philadelphia Eagles, everyone loves right now. But if they win the next Super Bowl, everyone will fucking turn on them. Because concretely, they had not won. And concretely, the Patriots had won a bunch. Therefore, the Patriots were evil. The Eagles were good. The Eagles were the oppressed. Therefore, they deserve to win, and everyone's happy for it. But that will turn. And it's the same thing with everything now. That's why we're pushing certain movies. We're pushing, you know, everyone has to wear black for women at the Golden Globes. You know, that's why we're pushing. We have to have minorities win all these awards, because that's all it is right now. But once they continue to win a bunch, then everyone will turn on them. It's very concretely numbers-based. You can only win a certain amount of time.
Not only that, but also... that has to do with the achievement side. This is sort of a side note. I've already seen some leftists turning against Philadelphia. Do you want to take a guess why?
I don't know. I haven't been paying enough attention, probably.
The mascot is the Eagles?
Guess. I'm not going to make you take a guess. You can just say, no, I don't want to guess. Just tell me. Please, let's move on with the show. The reason is because...
No, hold on. Let me guess.
Oh, okay.
Is it because they're the Eagles and the eagle is the symbol of America?
If this were Woker joke, that would be one of the possible answers, because it's very believable.
I mean, it's probably because answer, Nick though. Foles and Chris Long are white, and Chris Long is like this white guy who keeps falling on his sword for social justice, so they probably think he's an asshole for it or something.
That's not out of the ballpark. It's because Nick Foles and the coach, I forget the coach's name off the top of my head.
Doug Peterson.
Post-game interviews now. Thank you, Doug Peterson. And basically, when everyone asks them, like, How did you win this, and how are you celebrating? They're basically like, oh, all glory goes to God. This is totally a victory for God. Mm. God is awesome. We do all this through Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. And the left is already like, oh, we shouldn't have rooted for these bastards. The Patriots are evil, but at least they're atheists.
At least we only worship Tom Brady and Bill Belichick in New England. I mean, fucking, like, you make me want to support the team that beat my team in the Super Bowl. Fuck you. Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, I'm an atheist, but I don't find anything offensive about people praying before a football game.
How dare they say what they believe? How dare they?
That's right.
Freedom of speech sucks.
Get that drop. Speaking of saying what they believe, okay. This goes into me in the bucket of really highbrow farce. Really, this next story. We have some pretty lowbrow farce at times, like that girl who tried to give her mom bleach for not buying her a cell phone.
How about eating Tide Pods?
That's really lowbrow farce. But this story is pretty highbrow farce. Graffiti artists are awarded $6.7 million for their destroyed Five Points murals. Yes. Ruling that, this is the article now for the New York Times, ruling that graffiti, a typically transient form of art, was of sufficient stature to be protected by law. A federal judge in Brooklyn awarded a judgment of $6.7 million on Monday to 21 graffiti artists whose works were destroyed in a 2013 repainting of the Five Points complex in Long Island. This was a landmark trial, And the defendants, I guess, defendants? The graffiti artists were arguing that this was the, quote, world's largest open-air aerosol museum. Yes. And, of course, the very owner of the building was arguing that it's his effing building. But it turns out there's something called the Visual Artists' Rights Act, which protects public art of, quote, a recognized stature, even if it's created on someone else's property. So the judge, Frederick Block, upheld the jury's decision and awarded damages, saying that 45 of the dozens of murals had enough artistic stature to merit being protected under this law. Justin, is it somewhat good news that courts have decided to recognize property rights, even if they're property rights of people who don't actually own the property?
I mean, yeah, at least they're like, hey, people can own shit, and it's not just the government's, like... I mean, at least the...
I'm trying to find what would call a pewter lining to this story. It's definitely not silver.
Well, I got one for you. I got a pewter lining for you. At least the judge has an appropriate name. I mean, Block? Like, the dude's a blockhead with this. Like, this is the equivalent...
Right. Judge Block.
This is the equivalent of, like, somebody coming into my house, making a sandwich with my peanut butter jelly and bread, and then leaving it. Because they found out they broke in, and then if I eat the sandwich, because I'm like, hey, well, it's a sandwich, and it's my shit, I might as well eat it, then I have to pay them restitutions for eating the sandwich that they made. When I'm the one who bought the items, I kept them in my house, and they broke into my house and made the sandwich. That's what this is the equivalent of.
But Justin, quote, the clear message is that the art is protected by federal law, must be cherished and not destroyed. With this win, the spirit of Five Points becomes a legacy for generations of artists to come. With this win, we are one step closer to abolishing all property whites.
Property whites? Did you just say? I just heard whites.
I was about to say the property whites rights of rich white men, because it probably was a rich white man who owned this thing. So rights got mixed with the whites.
That's right.
James, so, did you join the...
We're against
the,
those property whites.
Did you join the alt-Reich in the season break?
That's right. But James, your point is well taken here. This to me seems like if there was something blatantly Marxist, it's in that last paragraph, right?
Yeah.
Like I cannot believe how blatant that is in many ways, but can we stop pretending that graffiti is art, first of all? This is sort of a broader point. It's not. It's in the name. It's graffiti.
Isn't graffiti the intentional degradation of someone else's property because you're pissed off at them? Isn't that what it is?
That's what I mean. Like, it's in the name. You can graffiti art. Like, if I had a painting and you decided to put your crap all over the painting with paint, you have committed an act of graffiti on my painting, on my art.
Can
right?
I break
it's not
it?
Art.
It's...
Go ahead.
It's just basically the human version of what male dogs do to claim other things. Like, I pissed on this, so now you're probably less likely to enjoy it. So it's a little closer to being mine now. Like, if I just scribble my name on like, if Daniel, if I come into your house and I take a Sharpie and just start writing my name on things, like, I go up to one of your paintings and write my name on. I go up to Faiza and write my name on her forehead. Fice is a little less yours now.
That's right.
And then I just start pissing on your furniture. Like, you'd probably just kind of let me have that couch. And so I'd have a piss-smelling couch
now,
in my
James.
Room
Please
from now
take
on.
This with you.
Well, I was originally going to use that metaphor.
That with aerosol cans.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you go into my house and piss on my clothes and then I burn them because I don't want to have them and I don't want you to have them, I don't have to pay you restitution.
That
was in New York.
Those clothes were some of the finest piss galleries in all of America, Justin. You took them away from the public.
Can I now break That's into right. the Louvre and paint a frown on the Mona Lisa? Can I do that now?
If it's of substantial cultural value, then yes, totally.
Well, it is. I don't like that she's smiling and has a positive view of the life when world of life when there's so much oppression and sadness going on and suffering.
This all started happening when we decided that Banksy had some value. I never signed off on that, by the way. I have no interest in Banksy, Wanksy, or any of the other skis.
Hey.
It's supposed to be a Polish joke.
Yeah, I got Thank it. You. Fuck off. You like Gronkowski.
Or anything they're putting on other people's property or buildings. This is not to say that people like Banksy or people who commit graffiti can't also be talented artists. Go do it on your own frickin' canvas. Go do it on your own time, your own property, with your own materials, and leave my crap and other people's crap alone. Isn't that the basic principle of society? Is if it's mine, you don't touch it.
Right.
If it's mine, it's mine. And if it's yours, it's yours.
I have
Let's
a question.
Let's not mix those two up. Yes.
So didn't Banksy do some stuff on like sidewalks, like public sidewalks?
I'm sure. Yes.
Right.
But
so doesn't that
specifically,
but doesn't that muddle things if like someone does like graffiti on a sidewalk that's government owned? Doesn't that?
Well, totally. Which is why I'm for privatizing everything. But yes.
Right.
My dog agrees. Got very angry. So, what is causing all this conceptual confusion? Let's talk a little bit about an Andrew Sullivan article that's making the rounds this week that, by all accounts and by reading it numerous times, is friggin' fantastic. Mm-hmm. This article is titled, We All Live on Campus Now. So he opens up by basically saying that over the last year, he's been getting a lot of rebuff to his coverage of things that have been happening on campus. Basically, people saying, these are a bunch of spoiled college kids. Once they go into the real world, this microaggression, white supremacy, rape culture, white privilege crap will all go away. None of this is pertinent. Why are you talking about it? And he says this, quote, the reason I don't agree with this is because I believe ideas matter. When elite universities shift their entire worldview away from liberal education, as we have long known it, toward the imperatives of an identity-based social justice movement, the broader culture is in danger of drifting away from liberal democracy as well. If elites believe that the core truth of our society is a system of interlocking and oppressive power structures based around immutable characteristics like race or sex or sexual orientation, then sooner rather than later, this will be reflected in our culture at large. What matters most of all in these colleges, your membership in a group that is embedded in a hierarchy of oppression, will soon enough be what matters in the society as a whole. Every paragraph reads with that incredible articulate thought, so I could essentially read the entire article here, but he goes on to talk about how enlightenment principles are being destroyed for the sake of groupthink, and power codes and hate speech and how polarization is increasing, and then he even has a paragraph about objective truth and how that's going away. But he ends with this, and then we can dive into any part you want, Justin. He says, the goal of our culture is now not the emancipation of the individual from the group, but the permanent definition of the individual by the group. We used to call this bigotry. Now we call it being woke. You see, we are all on campus now. Justin, there's so much meaty deliciousness in this article. Where do you want to sink your teeth into?
TheMidSide.com, where people can go to read this article in its entirety.
Yes, there you go.
I had to get that plug in. I don't know why you didn't do it, but no, it's the individualism thing. Like, oh my God, like that is, if there's one thing that I care about and there's one thing that I value in other people, isn't it individualism? Isn't it when they're just themselves?
I think it is.
Yes, that is what I love. And, you know, that's what I love about someone like Jordan Peterson, where I'm reading his book right now. And in it, he says the way to balance chaos and organization, which are the two things we need in society, is for everyone to be an individual and take on the responsibility of living yourself. Because what is happening right now is you are no longer a person. You are no longer worthwhile. All that matters is what other people do for you and what you do for other people. The reason this article stuck out to me so much, besides that brilliant line that you just quoted, is something we've talked about before is I kind of experienced all this beforehand when I was at Ithaca from 01 to 05 when I was an undergrad. Is somebody opening up a can or something like? Oh, Daniel's apparently eating tuna fish or feeding his dog while I'm going on a rant. So okay, well, for people who can't hear it, that's what I'm hearing. Anyway, when I was at Ithaca from 01 to 05 in my undergrad in upstate New York, I was experiencing this. And it literally was, I couldn't wait to get out of college, and I didn't know why. And now I know why. Nobody saw me for me. I was just a member of a group I was in. And that's the point we're at now, is you are not you. Nobody gives a shit. That's all it is. It's just what group you're in. And it is horrifying that we are living on a giant college campus. All anyone wants to do is participate in hedonism and just get theirs to participate in this hedonism. And it's fucking terrifying. This is the Justin is scared of everything edition. It's a fucking, I hate it. Is your dog fed though, yeah, Daniel?
And
yes, thank you. Now, just point of order here. When I go away and you hear those noises, I'm away from my computer. So the computer can't hear those noises, and thus the people can't hear those noises. So stop being a D-bag.
I wasn't Justin, worried about the group of the people out there. I was worried about me as an individual and being distracted by it, okay? See how I grounded that in the story?
Point. Very good tie-in, Justin.
Barely taken, yes. Okay. I think one of the core elements about this article, one of the things that I like to rail on all the time, and James, you can maybe sink your teeth into this a little bit more, is his point about how this is Marxism. And even if you sprinkle a tiny bit of liberalism on top of your Marxism, it's still Marxism.
Yeah.
And so it's horrifying.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it.
You can't put chocolate on your dog shit and pretend it's not dog shit and force us to eat it.
That would be the less eloquent version of that. Yes. Thank you, Justin. Very good.
You know, and I watched this the main thesis of this article that we're all on campus now play out sort of in mixture with what you're saying, Daniel, how it's like if your core assumptions are Marxist, you can't maintain the aspects of your liberal thought that you had to begin with. And I saw this play out actually in my own life. I went to USC, which, contrary to Justin's experience, is, I mean, I went to college years after Justin, so like it had gotten, colleges in general had gotten worse, but
hey,
USC was still probably
hey, I'm not that fucking old.
way after,
so beyond after Justin.
Years,
I mean, by that point we had like pencils and stuff and not just rocks and chisels.
Yeah, we had a base 10 number system by the time I was in college.
When I was your age,
newfangled thing called the wheel.
Trigonometry had fully been formulated.
When I was your age, tires were squares, and we liked it.
That's right. We ate our meat raw. We liked it. Fire's bad. Yeah. Okay.
But despite those advances, colleges in general had gotten worse. But at USC, it was still way better than Justin's experience because it's USC, just not as much of a liberal crap hole as most places. And a lot of my friends that I had who were in sort of, you know, they were in like pre-med degrees, kind of normal degrees that aren't usually don't get terribly corrupted by this stuff, at least not when you're at a USC stage of development in this leftist stuff. And but I talked to them years later, and they were completely just normal, reasonable people. And then I knew them at USC. I talked to them years later in a Facebook conversation, and they were such incredible leftists. Just, and I remember this one girl who's Hispanic. She said, like, you don't have the right to question what I'm saying because of my Hispanic heritage. Like, you can't speak about my experience because you're white and I'm Hispanic. And I said, well, that's assuming that I'm unable to understand certain ideas because of my blood is racism. And so, almost tongue in cheek, I demanded an apology for, you know, her making assumptions about me based on my race. And then all of them, all three of these people I used to know, just thought that, just did not understand that. They just said, like, that's a joke. You're saying that just as a sophistic kind of move against us. Like, that's just you playing with words. That's, you know, a trick. Like, you know, you're despicable for doing this. I just was incredibly surprised by this. And, you know, so it shows, like, we're all living on campus because, you know, even people who are just kind of normal liberal kind of people came out Marxists once they just kind of grew up and became more intellectual.
Well, yeah. I actually think you should say that seriously. Ask for that apology seriously, because they are being racist towards you. They're not treating you as an individual. Yeah. You deserve to be respected. I don't even think it should be like tongue in cheek. That is a serious, like, I would not participate in the conversation at that point. Similarly on Facebook, you know, experience, it's not me directly, but someone my girlfriend is friends with posted after one of the shootings. I don't remember what it was, but he posted, and this is a minority, he posted, "I hope the shooter is white this time." And people are like, "What the fuck?" And he's like, "Yeah, well, otherwise they'll start blaming minorities and not look at what the real problem is and everything." How fucking fucked up do you have to be? How collectivist do you have to be to worry about who the race or gender or religion or anything of the fucking shooter is, of anyone? That is so fucked up. And James, on the point about colleges, I want to be clear. The reason Ithaca was so far ahead is if you look at the three most leftist college towns in America, it's Ithaca, Berkeley, and Boulder. And let us not forget the Battle of Berkeley, where Milo was speaking and Antifa took over and attacked people and put them in the hospital. So if we want to, yeah, again say, well, I saw 10 to 12 years ago what was coming down the pipeline, and we saw that at Berkeley, that gives me a moment of pause to say, is that where we're going? Is that the anarchy we're headed towards, where it's one group fighting another group? It's not, oh, these are a bunch of individuals in line who want to hear someone they find interesting speak. It's no, everyone in line must think the same thing and must be an alt-right Trump Nazi supporter, because those are all the same thing, because we only think in groups now. So it's okay for our group to attack their group. Is that where we're headed? That's the pause I have. And of course, to tie this back to the beginning, the reason it's going to become anarchy is fucking law enforcement can't do anything about this. We can sit here and we can say we're shocked that the FBI said that, but can we really be shocked when in the Battle of Berkeley, the government's response, the police force's response, was to let them fight it out and tire themselves out and then go in and keep the peace? No one was protected in that. The people who were sent in the hospital who were unarmed, who were pepper sprayed and hit over the head and attacked, they should have been protected by the police. Were they? No, because the police cannot do its job anymore. That's why this is all fucking terrifying. It all goes together. We're living on campus where if you press the blue rape lights, right, you have those blue lights on campus, their rapist shows up, not the police. Like, you press the light, you go, "I don't want to be raped," like, because there's some guy, and then another rapist shows up and you're like, fuck. That's what happens when you press those blue lights now.
Yeah. Pretty frightening stuff. I think I don't have too much to add to that, except that, you know, we already have the Punch a Nazi movement. The way this is going, it's not going to be long before it's not just Punch a Nazi anymore. It's going to be Punch an NRA member, or Punch anyone who believes in the Second Amendment, or Punch someone who says the word Constitution.
Did you get that from Midsider Williams' Facebook page, Daniel?
I did not, but great genius minds, you know.
Not only could you get that from Williams' Facebook page, but you could get that from the Punisher series, where there's this right-wing extremist who starts blowing people up in the name of his political beliefs. But when he talks about his political beliefs, they're just like mainstream conservative beliefs, like just straightforward, not extreme, like conservatism.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I the last point I'll say about the Marxist thing is, it's surprising to me that people didn't take the Marxism seriously. And what I mean by that is, there was sort of a taking of it seriously back when we called it communism. And we sort of rooted it out, and then we had Reagan and the wall fell and all that. But after the wall fell, especially when the Soviet Union collapsed, we sort of had this notion that, like, oh, everyone, all Marxism is gone, and there's some communism left in the world, but it's sort of like light communism or whatever, like capitalist communism. Whenever I read this, or when I saw people talk about it, like capitalism won, Marxism is gone or whatever, all I could think of was like, have these people never visited a school? Ever? Have you never been on a college campus? Because I went to school in the middle of central Illinois in what should be conservative heartland. And even there, the teachers were wildly Marxist, wildly Marxist. And the students may have been a little bit more moderate, or whatever you might want to call it, moderate progressive, but that what they were teaching was outright unabashed Marxism. Under the name of cultural criticism or critical theory, that's what the name is in schools. But it was unequivocally, not even watered down, pure Marxism. And all I could think was, no, Marxism didn't go away. I think all these communists just like killed themselves when they went home after the Soviet Union collapsed. Do you think all these people who were sympathetic with the Soviet Union and the United States went, oh, well, I guess we were wrong. Let's move on with our lives. No, they just went about it differently. They went to be professors, essentially. So that's all I have to say about that.
I think what prevents people from seeing this is exactly what Sullivan says in his second paragraph, is that they don't understand that ideas matter. They just don't. They're like, oh, well, that's what those, you know, that's what the young people do. They're really like idealistic. But soon enough, you know, you abandon your ideals and you become practical. It's like, well, but what determines what you believe is practical? And what about the people who, you know, don't end up abandoning their dreams? What do those dreams look like when they grow up? You know, what happens when you make your Mark Zuckerberg and you make your millions, and now you want to turn towards social concerns? What molds those concerns? Well, it's all the crap that Zuckerberg himself participates in.
Yeah. It's also because,
and I mean,
James, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just adding on to it. It's also because most people are not spending their lives in a way that they can worry about ideas. They're going to work and they're doing what they need to support themselves and their family. They have real concrete things to worry about. And they've existed on the inertia of the founding fathers and their ideas in the Constitution and Declaration forever. And now it's coming to the point where all this is being brought into question and no one had to worry about that before, because they set such a good basis for all of that. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. And yeah, it's not necessarily people who kind of sold their ideals out. It's just people who don't work in the field of abstract ideas.
Yeah, if you're a blue-collar worker,
it all gets de-emphasized.
Right. If you're a blue-collar worker, all you do is you go to work every day, you take care of your business, you take care of your family, and you're happy. And that's what your life is. This is part of why the country is so divided, and we see the two coasts, and then we have the flyover states, middle America, voting in different ways. That's part of why. It's all related.
Yeah. And I mean, this goes to show that the people who control those people, and you know, that was their choice and it's a perfectly legitimate choice, have chosen not to grab hold of the wheel of culture, like grab hold of where the culture gets steered. But that means that anyone who does concern themselves with abstract ideas is able to take hold of that wheel and make a difference. And unfortunately, Sullivan has a lot of really good things to say here about the negative, but there's not a lot of positive arguments in favor of what will save us. He talks about the Enlightenment, but what was good about the Enlightenment? Like, for example, how do we know there's a such thing as objective truth? What's the argument there? And, you know, that's the main thing we should be focusing on, is that positive argument that, of course, I think can be found in Ayn Rand's philosophies. Like, how do we return back to using reason? Like, how do we even know reason works to begin with? Like, what is reason? Those are questions you have to answer if you want to come back towards a rational view of the world. It's not enough to just point out irrationality and say, like, okay, well, what's your positive view? I was like, oh, well, I don't know. We should just use common sense. Because to a lot of people, common sense tilts in the direction of these crazy people. Like, oh, they're a little extreme, but like they have a good point. And so long as that's sort of the default view, they've won. That's all they need.
Sorry, so. James, I couldn't hear you over the call of the sage grouse.
I lean in the direction of the sage grouse.
Right now, I'm just happy that he's pointing out that there is a problem and we're identifying the problem and that he's responding and saying the answer is the Enlightenment and it's specifically individualism. Right now, that's a start.
Yeah.
Right now, that's missing. And right now, that's what people need to hear because that is what is going to convince people. Hey, this is about you being you, taking care of your shit and not asking anyone to take care of you because the government can't fucking do its job right now. I think it's a great way to sum up the news because we can keep going on this forever and this is a time limited show.
Right.
So I think it's time to move on. And I know that'll make Daniel happy. Right, Daniel?
Let's move it along.
Let's move it along in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. This past week, we released a Patreon exclusive review of the 1517 to Paris, Clint Eastwood's latest movie. If you want to hear that movie, or hear that movie, hear that review of that movie, you can only hear it on Patreon if you are a Patreon supporter. So thank you to our Patreon supporters for wanting content like that. I hope you enjoyed it. And everyone else, if you're wondering what I and a couple of Midsiders thought of that movie, go right now and subscribe to Patreon to hear all about it. We will be doing more of those as the season progresses. For now, though, I want to review a movie I saw a preview screening of. Game Night is a comedy. It comes out on Friday, February 23rd, and I was able to see it about a week in advance. This movie is starring Jason Bateman, and I can't fucking remember her name. She's from she's from Mean Girls. She's from The Notebook. She played Regina George. Anyone helping me out here?
Rachel McAdams.
Rachel McAdams. Thank you. I don't know if anyone can hear my girlfriend. She's supposed to be taking a nap, but she's apparently participating in the podcast now. But yeah, I saw it with her last night. And I will say this about this movie, Game Night. I find most comedies to be fucking insipid and annoying. And I laughed very heartily at this movie throughout it. The dialogue was very witty, and the situations it put the characters in were exaggerated, but they weren't exaggerated to such an extreme that it was absurdist in the way, say, like a Will Ferrell or an Amy Schumer is, where it's just so disconnected from reality that I'm like, this isn't funny. But in this movie, it focuses on the couple of Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams and their relationship, and they are highly competitive, so they participate in games all the time, like barroom trivia, or they just have game nights at home. And then his brother, who's supposed to be the super successful guy, comes back and hosts a game night, and it degenerates into chaos. It's a very funny movie. The one negative I will say about this movie is it becomes apparent through the movie that the brother is a bad guy. And to prove that the main character played by Jason Bateman is a good guy, rather than just do what he did in the third season finale of Arrested Development, where he's like, my family's crazy, I'm out of here, peace. He basically becomes an action star to save his brother. So even though he finds out his brother is a criminal and a bad person, he says, well, I'm still going to save him, which we're supposed to be like, yay, he saves his brother, blah, blah, blah. Now, based upon everything we were just talking about, I have to acknowledge that that is a form of collectivism, right? The idea that the collective of your family is more important than anything else. And you're a good person because, oh, you're going to protect your brother no matter what. No, there has to be certain lines and certain morals. So I wish it had gone in a different direction, but taking it for what it is, it's a very funny movie. You should see it if you enjoy witty dialogue, if you enjoy absurd situations, if you enjoy Jason Bateman. This is him being as funny as he can be. You shouldn't see it if you're just going to get annoyed at the fact that, like, his brother sucks and he has to save his brother anyway. And you're going to get annoyed if it you don't like the fact that it degenerates into an action movie. And if you're not willing to accept that this is a comedy and it's really, really a farce, you're not going to be able to accept that he somehow and Rachel McAdams somehow become action stars. So you won't like that. But I think it's worth seeing. I think it's one of the better movies to come out in recent times. So it's not as good as Jumanji. It doesn't have the thematic depth, but it was an enjoyable movie, and I haven't laughed that hard in a long time. All right. So now that I've talked about something that's about to come out, let's talk about some things that are going to come out even further in the future.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
Every day is Quantum Leap meets A Fault in Our Stars, something like that. So the basic premise of this movie is that I don't even know how old the person is. I'm assuming it's a teenager, leaps into a different body every day. And in one of the leaps, we don't even know the gender. Do you have a gender at this point? Because the bodies this person is leaping into are different genders, different races. And he, she, it, whatever, falls in love with a girl. And then every time he, she, it, I'm going to refer to this person from now on, leaps into a new life, he, she, it goes and finds the girl he, she, it is in love with. And then they have this romance across time that's like, oh, what if you stay in love with me and I keep jumping into bodies, blah, blah, blah. And that's the premise of the movie. Now, the reason I wanted to talk about this movie is very simple. To me, this movie is completely the mind-body dichotomy. You do not just fall in love with somebody's mind. You fall in love with their body as well, because the body shapes the mind and the mind shapes the body. They are intertwined. There is no way you can decouple those. You can break those apart. So the idea that you could fall in love with somebody and then that person leaps into a new body of a completely different gender, of a completely different body type, of a completely different race, or however you want to say it.
Oh, and that is where they're going with
and
this.
And it would still, well, they do jump into different races. The he, she, it jumps into different races. But the idea that somebody, you could fall in love with them as they are, right? You meet someone. So Daniel, you meet Faiza and you're in love with her and you're married to her. And she is a beautiful Pakistani woman who has a certain personality. And then she jumps into a small Asian man's body and comes and finds you. There's no way you could still be in love with her. She would no longer be the same person. And the idea that it is simply your consciousness that defines who you are is terrible. And this movie is terrible because it's trying to reduce human beings and make them something they aren't. Tackle.
How rich is the small Asian man?
I don't know, but he has a very small penis. Look, I will say this. The one thought I did have was, well, at least you would have an excuse to have variety of the people you're fucking every day. Like, you could try something new every day. One day you're fucking somebody of the same gender. Another day you're fucking somebody with a big dick. Another day a small dick. Another day a loose pussy. You know what I mean? Like, you just get to try all the different things. That's the one positive.
Yeah, it's a veritable human buffet.
100%.
Is the small Asian man Mr. Miyagi?
Well, that may be good, because the only way you can protect people from nowadays is to be Mr. Miyagi. People can just fucking break into your house and you don't have guns. You're going to use chopsticks to protect yourself.
Yes. So many questions that shouldn't be asked, because this movie is clearly a tackle. But things like, are they leaping? Like, does their location change? Meaning, like, do they wake up in India one morning and then Australia the next and then back in Brooklyn? Or are they in the same place and they wake up as an entirely new person? Two, where do these people come from? And do they go back to being people who aren't possessed by this person it's over?
I think yes. The answer to that question is yes. I think you, like, the he, she, it takes over the body for the day and lives their best life. And then they go back to being who they are the next day.
That person doesn't love this weird-looking blonde chick. Like, doesn't that seem a little horrible? Like, I don't care what your values are. I'm going to go be in love with this blondie over here. Like, I'd be pissed. Not into blondes. Is the small Asian man blonde? Okay. Let's move on. This is the worst movie I've ever seen.
While we're talking about Asian men and their hair, I forgot to issue a retraction at the beginning. My girlfriend pointed out to me that Japanese men actually do have high incidences of baldness because they're extremely stressed out due to work, because the Japanese work environment is very high pressure. So that's why they're trying to cure baldness.
Still follows on my list of races you would not immediately think of when you say male pattern baldness. And that's right. A completely different list of races that actually suffer from male pattern baldness, just to be clear.
I agree. I just had to issue that to retraction, and I forgot at the top of the show.
I would watch Hurricane Heist 100 times before I watch this movie.
See? I told you, that's a good movie.
No, I did not say that. I was meant to imply that it would be torturous, but I would still do it before watching this piece of crap of a film. This is, you said Quantum Leap earlier, my joke was Quantum Leap meets mind-body dichotomy. So I can't deal. So hard of a tackle. Just terrible.
Tackle.
This movie for me can be summarized with, if you go to YouTube, type in Quantum Leap, I'm retarded, and you'll see Scott Bakula look at himself in the mirror and he'll say, I'm retarded? Tackle.
Wait, did he leap into a retarded person's body at one point?
Yeah, he does, and he looks at himself in the mirror. He says, I'm retarded? And then he looks himself in the mirror, and like when he looks, the face looking back at him is not Scott Bakula. It's like a clearly like retarded boy. And they play this music, like this children's music. It's a really funny clip. And that's just what I thought of here.
I have so many questions about this episode. So if you leap into the body of someone who has Down syndrome, right? So let's say hypothetically this person in this movie leaps into the body of someone who has Down syndrome. Does your mind not work the way it did before? Or do they take the mind-body dichotomy to such a degree that your consciousness still works the same way as if you had 160 IQ?
These are the sorts of contradictions you get into when you assume the mind-body dichotomy, because, the mind is caused by the brain, which can be, either regular or, 24 chromosome.
All right. Well, right. You know what? I know a dichotomy that isn't real. The Rock Awesome dichotomy. Let's move forward to that.
Second trailer.
Rampage sees Dwayne Johnson play a zookeeper at the San Diego Wild Safari Park. And while there, a gorilla he is caring for gets some sort of green gas shot at him and becomes gigantic. He then goes to the city, I'm assuming San Diego, and fights a giant wolf and a giant crocodile. And The Rock utters the line, let's go save the world. I love The Rock. I'll watch any movie with The Rock in it. And I'm not saying something about this trailer because I want to see if either of you know. So I want to see if either of you identify it. But I will say this before we say where this movie came from. Any movie where The Rock says, let's go save the world, I'm immediately in. Hug. Daniel?
Justin, are you implying that I would not know that this is based on a popular arcade game?
Yes, I thought that was a possibility that you guys would not know that.
No, I 100% know that this is based on a popular. This goes along
Jumanji,
the same thing,
right?
Thank you, James. This fits in the same bucket as Battleship, for instance, which is just because I'm familiar with the franchise doesn't mean I'm going to like the movie more. Just make a good movie. I don't care if it's based on a franchise. In fact, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel here on franchises, right? When we get to Rampage. What's that other wildly popular video game of the 90s? Dragon's Lair? How about that one?
Bubble Bobble.
I know. Asteroid.
I want to see Bubble Bobble, the
Dug.
Movie. Dig Dug.
Dig Dug, the movie. QWERTY, the movie. Mavis Beacon's Typing Class, the movie. I just don't need a franchise. Just make good movies. This is not going to be a good movie.
I disagree.
I appreciate almost everything The Rock does, and I will vote for him for president. But I cannot in good conscience watch the President Rock in this movie. I just can't do it. So tackle.
Oh, Commander-in-Chief Rock.
No. Okay, I have a question.
I agree with Daniel. I will vote for The Rock, but I will not see this movie. Tackle.
I hate both of you. This is the question I want to ask both of you. When you were watching this trailer at the beginning, did you realize it was for Rampage? And at what point did you realize it was based on the video game?
Well, when the title Rampage was texted, put in text over the trailer, when did I know? When she said Project Rampage, and then the wolf came flying through, that's right. When I knew it was Rampage, the video game.
Yeah. Up until that point, I was like, oh, this is a cool movie about a giant gorilla that The Rock takes care of.
No, and then not a cool movie.
After about 10 seconds where it shows The Rock and a few other people crouching behind a fern, I thought this was just Jumanji again.
I would watch a movie called Jumanji again, starring The Rock again. I would watch that.
Jumanji again, the R-rated version. Yes.
All right. One more Rock movie.
Third trailer.
Skyscraper is The Rock's version of Die Hard in a skyscraper. So The Rock was in the FBI or something, and he lost a leg. And then he has a family, and he goes to this high-tech skyscraper made by Asians who are not bald. And I don't know how rich they are. I'm sorry, Daniel. And these Asians have created the most high-tech skyscraper of all time. And The Rock tells them, well, I don't know. If something goes wrong, I don't know if people will be safe. And then, of course, something goes wrong, and The Rock has to save the day. This movie, to me, is in the fine tradition of Steven Seagal movies, where it was like, hey, remember when we put Bruce Willis in a building, and it was Die Hard, and he was the only one who could save the day? What if we did that with Steven Seagal, except it was on a ship? Oh, wait, what if we did Steven Seagal and it was on a train? Well, it's the same thing here. They're like, the premise of this movie, what if we just took The Rock and he had to fight bad guys, but he's trapped in a skyscraper? What do we call it? Skyscraper. I like it. But there's not enough at stake here. Like, we've done this before. How do we make this more appealing and make more conflict? How do we make it so people believe The Rock might lose? Give him a prosthetic leg. That is how they came up with this movie. And you want to know something? I'm still going to see it. Hug.
Oh, my. Is there a Rock movie you will not see?
I don't know. If they keep looking like this.
If The Rock stars in Magic Mike 3, will you see it?
Oh, I would. I'll definitely see that. Are you kidding me? How have they not done that yet?
Magic Dwayne.
That's a lot of arm butter right there. Okay.
You know, Hold on.
Magic Mike 3, Rock Hard. How would you not see that movie?
God, that's horrifying. James, you were saying about skyscraper?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, this, I'm going to watch this. It looks cool. It looks like another, you know, another Die Hard. I think the prosthetic leg is not necessarily just a device to make us think that The Rock might lose. But I think it's kind of like sort of these very simple plot points that Die Hard had, like, you know, when Hans Gruber tells his men to shoot the glass because he knows that Bruce Willis is not wearing shoes. That's interesting. It's a very simple but interesting plot point for an action movie, because now his feet are all cut up. He's got to run across glass because he has to get away from the bullets and everything. So he has to run across glass. So now it's interesting. Like, OK, well, this action hero has a prosthetic leg. So that's going to lead to certain interesting plot points, like action wise. I'm on board. I'm worried it's going to be just too much of a copy of Die Hard, though. I'll watch it, though, because I think once you get into it and you see his family's at stake, you might get, you know, we might get invested.
A copy of one of the greatest movies of all time, yeah, is worth it, but say it. James,
say hug.
It. Hug. Thank you. All right, Daniel, I don't think you've said...
it was just building up, and there was just such relief.
Right, I haven't given my review yet. I'm waiting for you two to shut up.
I'm not going to shut up. I'm just waiting for the eventual Rock Dave Franco movie, okay?
Oh, my God. Your testicles will just literally explode.
Yep.
Okay, so there are two interesting things to me about this movie. One is that the static image on the YouTube video is designed such that it looks like The Rock is jumping on the play button. That's adorable. Two, the title looks like it is not Skyscraper, but in fact Dwayne Johnson Skyscraper, which I thought was funny. I was like, he's in his Johnson, own Skyscraper?
Skyscraper.
That's weird.
Dwayne Johnson in the Skyscraper of Doom.
And then three... there's no way in hell that I would choose for myself to go watch this movie, but in all likelihood I will end up seeing this movie because this is a Fiza bait movie. Like it stars The Rock and action and explosions and falling. She's in 100%, 150%, and so she if we're at the mall together and we're gonna see a movie, it might be this. I will be wildly disappointed if The Rock does not beat at least two people to death with his prosthetic.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what I thought of. He's gonna beat someone with that leg. I thought the same thing.
Worth the price of admission? The Rock hopping on one leg.
You say, Justin, that they gave him the prosthetic leg to add to the drama. I think it takes away from it. Why? Because Rock has a weapon at his feet, literally, at all times. He can use this thing to, like, break open windows. He can use this thing, like, he can throw it over a wire and hang on to it and zip line on things. It's basically unfair. This is The Rock superpowered.
This now, is well established. Now, he was a quadriplegic
in a wheelchair that he had to move with a straw in his mouth that he blew into. That would be more fair. I would watch that version of Skyscraper.
This is well established in the rundown, where the entire movie is basically just The Rock refusing to use guns, and everyone's like, this movie would be over if you just used a gun. And then he uses a gun, and the movie ends, and then he goes, that's why I don't use guns. And I go, oh, so you don't use guns so you can have an entire movie. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So, all in all, I will likely see this movie, but I have to in good conscience tackle it.
Tackle.
All right. Well, there's one left, and I think hopefully we all hug this.
Final trailer.
Ready Player One is the Steven Spielberg adaptation of the Edward Klein novel. I don't know why I said movie. It's novel. Novel. This is about a world where VR is what everyone uses. To me, it's clear Spielberg is using this as a metaphor for the internet, and a rebellion is created within this world to take the world back. I don't know. It's a little unclear besides the fact that this young kid is leading the rebellion. This is full of Easter egg pop culture references, and the trailer itself uses a very moody version of Pure Imagination from the Gene Wilder classic Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I saw this trailer and I was like, hey, Steven Spielberg, it's nice to see you again. Where have you been? Because it's like, what epic movie has Steven Spielberg done in the last 15 years? I'm going to say maybe somebody's going to make me look like an idiot, but whatever. I think this looks like it could be amazing. I like what Spielberg's doing with it. I like the fact that the author of the book co-wrote the screenplay with Zach Penn, who wrote some of the good X-Men movies. I think this has a lot of potential. I think it could be one of the best movies to come out in a long time. My expectations are very high. This will probably be a Patreon exclusive review. Hug. Daniel?
The BFG, Bridge of Spies, Lincoln, War Horse, Crystal Skull. That's where he's been. He's working on pre-production for West Side Story, a remake, which is interesting.
Were any of those movies epic, though?
Epic. Lincoln-ish? Not really that epic, I guess. Bridge of Spies? Didn't see it. So, your point is taken.
We know Crystal Skull was not very good.
But what about the refrigerator?
No, it's all about the interdimensional aliens.
Interdimensional aliens. They couldn't have just been aliens. They had to be interdimensional aliens.
That's
I will never forgive him for that.
That's my bit. You just took my bit.
That was our bit walking out of the theater. We saw that movie together when at the end of the movie, literally everyone in the theater booed. It was awesome.
Oh my God. Oh.
Yeah. So this looks interesting-ish, I guess. It is a sort of future dystopian technology is terrible movie, which James will get into why those are tiresome.
I didn't get that impression from this trailer.
It's the wrong trailer. This trailer is the most optimistic trailer of all of them. Some of them have been very horrible. And the plot is something like the maker of this utopia thing has like hidden an Easter egg in it, and if you find it, it's worth like $50 billion plus you own the company or something like that. And so they're all trying to kill each other.
Well, that makes the Willy Wonka song reference even stronger.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I definitely will see this because it's interesting, but I don't know. I don't know.
You just defined a hug.
Altered Carbon on Netflix looks more interesting to me than this. So, tentative hug.
Hug?
All right, take it. I'll take it. James?
I feel like I have a duty to tackle this because my friend Jeremy, when he studied to be a fiction writer, he... And partial Midsider Jeremy, he's listened to the show a few times. I don't think he'll listen to this one, though. But when he was studying to be a fiction writer, this book, this novel was held up as an example of really good popular fiction writing. And Jeremy hated the shit out of it. He thought, like, this is just a bunch of 80s reference porn, basically. Like, he just thought that it didn't have any real, like, content other than that. It was just sort of like a package for that, like, nostalgia porn. So I feel like I have a duty to tackle, but I will hug.
Hug?
I want to see what this is about. It looks pretty visually stimulating, and let's see how Jeremy's tastes are.
Well, this is
I wouldn't be surprised if I ended up loving this.
Yeah, it's definitely a candidate for a movie that could be just an order of magnitude better than the book. I started reading the book. It's boring as hell. It's poor writing. Mm. And I've met five or six other people in the past month or so since these trailers have come out who have also read the book and all universally thought it was trash. So
they thought the book was trash.
Yeah. So this has potential to be a movie that's way better than the actual book.
Which does not happen often.
No. Watchmen.
Well,
Lord
I agree.
Lord of the Rings.
Bye. Don't agree with that. Those movies were boring. But I will say, James, that this definitely will be reference porn either way. So if you look at the trailer, like, it's references all over the place.
Lord of the Rings, if you cut every walking scene.
So the entire movie.
I love the walking, man. Apparently you're not a hiker. It's just hiking. Yeah. I guess it's just hiking porn for me.
After the 300th shot of New Zealand, I was like, I don't care anymore.
All right. Let's move on to the final segment. It's time for Reddit on Reddit.
These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit. Now, I picked this one because I love the logic behind this statement. And maybe, James, you can unpack that a little bit, but... As being gay is becoming more accepted in society, what is something you're still waiting for to be accepted? Like, I love how that's
James,
our benchmark. Go ahead,
why
James.
Why don't you unpack that fudge for us, James? Just unpack that fudge. Just unpack it for us.
As perfectly acceptable thing is becoming more accepted in society, when are people going to let me off the hook for my faults?
That is an excellent translation of most of Reddit.
Yeah.
This is Reddit. This is everything. All subreddits are just a subreddit of this.
It's actually very true. And if you want to talk about collectivism and group thing, that's exactly what every subreddit is. It's like, this is my group I belong to, and nobody is nice to my group. Why won't you be nicer to my group? Well, it's because you're individually a douche. That's why.
When is it going to be more socially accepted to be bad at math? When are they going to stop giving me F's for not knowing any how to add?
That's right. The first answer on here is also one of the more Reddit answers. It's the first answer on what should be more accepted is a 4-day work week.
When are people going to let me off the hook for being a lazy fuck?
He adds, I'm talking about 4 days, 6 to 8 hours each day. So not even full 8 hours. 6 to 8 hours.
When am I going to get to work less than is required for a...
When am I going to get to work 24 myself? Hours a week total? When is that going to be acceptable?
When will the burden of maintaining a human existence be lifted from my shoulders? When will that be acceptable? This isn't... What's funny is we're not even telling jokes. We're just translating what's actually being said, not even trying to be funny.
Well, okay, so now you've distilled Reddit. You also just distilled Witness the Farce. So there you go.
That's right.
Yeah.
Like, right. Look at this. Look at this crap. Look at it.
The yin and the yang of internet. That's witnessing right. The farce and the farce itself.
So let's take the question less seriously. And just say what are things we wish were more just generally acceptable in society.
That's where I was going to go with this.
Oh, that's a good question.
So we could be glib or, you know, objectivist shallow here and say things like individualism and capitalism and reason and objectivity, things like that. So I think we have most of that covered. I'll go on a theme that I've been on, Justin, lately, especially because I'm going to be a father soon, and basically say, like, you know, saying, having a dude be able to say hi to a kid in public and give him a high five and move on. I'd like that to be a little more socially acceptable.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mm. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Being interested in making money, just a lot of times, like, I, you know, parents will ask for, like, cheaper rates, and I just say, like, no, like, I mean, I don't have to work that much. You know, I use most of my time writing my book. So, like, it's just not worth it to me unless I'm getting paid X amount. I get a lot of dirty looks for saying that. So, you know, just being selfish. I wish that was, you know, more societally right. accepted.
But they're special.
James, don't you do it for the children?
Yeah. They look at me like, aren't you a teacher? Like, aren't you should? And then, like, I'll even say, like, the reason I'm not a teacher is because it doesn't pay as much. Like, I don't know. I mean, I don't go on this whole spiel, but to sidetrack, like, teaching is hard. Like, being a good teacher is something that should probably be on the skill level of, like, a doctor or a lawyer. I mean, it isn't now because of, you know, the stupid public school system. But, you know, if you're good at teaching, you deserve about the same amount as a doctor or a lawyer. If you're good, if you actually complete the task.
So. That's why most teachers, 9 out of 10, don't try. There you go.
Right, yeah. Because, yeah, they absolutely do not.
Speaking on that, we're getting going on a really weird path here, but, like, what is their incentive to try? Do they get, like, great teacher bonuses? No, yeah, right. You get the same raise every year because you've been there an additional year. It's entirely because of your years of experience and not how good you are. That is a recipe for disaster, everyone.
Well, it's not even love
schools, public schools, hate them. You can't put that system in anywhere and expect good results. It's horrible.
It's not even that. Yeah. I mean, it's what we talked about with our group-based culture is to teach a student well, you have to teach them to think for themselves. And if you do that, not only are you not going to be rewarded monetarily, but you're also going to be punished for not teaching the doctrine.
That's right.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, even it, and I can tell you it's even infected private schools. I mean, I tutor a lot of private school kids, and I think the idea is that, you know, if you're a teacher, you're essentially part of the clergy of knowledge, and you're supposed to just do this because, you know, you're dedicated to your job selflessly. And there are a lot of good teachers who just want to do a good job. They're not selfless. They're just if you have a job, you're happier if you try your best at it. And so they do this. But they are the Atlases holding our rickety education system afloat.
There we go.
But anyway, but back to Reddit.
Can I give my answer now?
Oh, yeah, you're here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Justin, the dude who runs the show. Hell yeah.
Yeah. So I was going to answer the knowledge and the acceptance that alcohol and drugs are poison. Literally, they are poison. Now, I'm not saying you can't do them responsibly, but the example I would give is, I don't know if anyone saw recently that Jordan Peterson did an interview with Vice News on HBO, and some of the clips are on Twitter. Well, that's one of the things he says, where they ask, like, how do we stop this rape culture on campus? And he goes, well, how about having people be responsible for once and not encourage all of this drinking that goes on campus? There is a level in our culture right now of acceptable alcoholism. And I wish that that would not be acceptable anymore. I'm not talking about people who have one or two drinks and say, hey, I enjoy this, and that's it. I'm talking about the idea that people will dump poison down in their body to feel the effects of that poison. That is what I am talking about. I wish it was socially acceptable for me to say that, but it's not. And now I sound crazy, but I don't care, because that's what it is. And when someone like Jordan Peterson points out that that's what's leading to people making these terrible decisions, he's right. And I agree with him. And I wish more people would allow me to say that.
Lighten up, man. Have a shot. Jeez.
Prude. See, we're all on campus now. This is part of the we're all on campus, because that's what people would say to me if I said that undergrad.
Dude, chill. Yeah.
Thanks for the yes and there. All right, are we ready to move on?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I like this next question. It's fun.
Second Reddick. If historical figures actually did roll in their graves, which grave would generate the most power if hooked up to a generator? This is an interesting question to me, because it's like, which of the founding fathers would be the most pissed off right now?
Would it be Jefferson just spinning, saying, I told you so? Or
yeah.
Yeah.
Or Adams, or Franklin, or Washington. Which one?
I think Washington is a good candidate, because he, one, said political parties will destroy America, and two, said don't be involved in foreign affairs. It's nothing but trouble. It's like, oh, that's our entire political system.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
I think that's definitely a contender. Interestingly, the first answer on here was actually one I considered, which this is sort of, will get me kicked out of the movement yet again. But like Nietzsche. The way Nietzsche is taught today and interpreted today and sort of maligned today is very different from what Nietzsche would have been in his day, especially if you read the source materials and stuff, and especially his book on morality, which he never wanted published, which was later published and then used by the Nazis to justify their nonsense. So I think that's an interesting answer. By the way, it was Nietzsche's sister who actually published his work and gave it to the Nazi party, which is really funny. So,
yeah.
Women ruin my everything.
I don't know if this would generate the most power, but someone who's definitely, generating a fair number of mega amps right now would be the physicists and mathematicians Newton and Maxwell, looking at where math and just the way people think about math and physics now, how they just. Newton and Maxwell were both mathematicians they're thought of as mathematicians, but like they were motivated entirely by physical problems. And now mathematicians just kind of go off into oblivion, just talking about abstractions with no connection to reality. And they would also be very distraught at how their theories are kind of used now, how they thought like, oh, well, we've moved past the naive cause and effect, way of thinking about the world that, Newton and Maxwell used. Like, now we know that, reality is really indeterminate now that we have quantum mechanics. So that would make Sir Isaac have a little tear roll down his eye.
That's right. Justin, who do you think?
So I have a couple answers to this. The first is, wouldn't it be any of the so-called robber barons? Like, think of, like, Andrew Carnegie or Rockefeller, right? Like, Carnegie does all these great things, and then he founds a great institution, and now colleges are being used to destroy the very foundation of the ideas that were he used to create the greatness for our society. Same with Rockefeller, right? He creates all this stuff at Rockefeller Plaza is in New York City, and now the entire city around what he built is just against everything he used to build it. I just imagine that. And then I have an ironic one. What about Hitler? The fact that everyone compares everyone to Hitler that they don't like. Like, don't you think he'd be like, none of these are the master race and are supporting the master race. Stop besmirching my name.
Never has it been a better time to be actual Hitler.
Right. I mean, that's just right. It's the same. It's the Adam Carolla principle. 100% James. Like, yes. How angry do you think it makes Hitler to be compared to Donald Trump?
Like, this loser Jew. Right. I
good one, Justin.
Found this answer very funny, which is rare on Reddit, but it's a 6-part answer, which is step 1, put grave generator on Karl Marx's grave. 2, acquire energy from his spinning. 3, use energy to power businesses, factories, shopping malls, etc. 4, due to being literally used to power capitalism, Karl spins faster. 5, spins faster, produces more energy, helps capitalism more, creating positive feedback loop. 6, exponentially growing infinite energy source.
Yeah,
I believe we've produced a perpetual motion machine. Send it to the patent office.
I was going
to
say the same thing.
It's awesome. I like pooping on Karl Marx and his legacy. So,
well, isn't that the idea that somebody charges money to visit his grave?
Yes, his grave is privately owned, and you have to pay an entrance fee, which is hysterical.
Yes. All right. Last Reddit. I think this is a nice bookend for this episode. What job exists solely because humans are assholes? Well, my answer is, of course. Answer. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. It's your show.
Oh, I was going to say government.
No. It's funny. It would be interesting if we could have no moral fault, would there be government?
Yeah.
It's an interesting nonsense question that has no purpose in reality whatsoever. my answer is any minimum wage employee who keeps us from entering something who is not an actual police officer. So this would involve TSA, guards at like checkpoints, getting into office buildings, whatever, who it's just a constant hassle. Like, it's just, oh my God. I tried to get into a building the other day where I had a meeting with someone, and they're like, your name's not on the list. You can't go up. I'm like, but I have a meeting. Could you call up? And they're like, we don't do that. That's against procedure. Your name has to be on the list. It's like, you make $11 an hour. Can I please just go upstairs? Do I look like a terrorist? Like,
you took this answer from Adam Carolla.
I did because it happened to me this week. I literally could not get into a meeting because someone who makes $11 an hour said my name wasn't on a list, and he could not. It was against procedure to call up. I had to call on my own cell phone, and they had to come down and put my name on a list, and then I could go up in the elevator.
Wait. The guy in charge couldn't come down and get you? He had to write your name down.
Yes, the name had to be submitted through the system.
Wow.
Yeah, see, these systems, they have to be there just to reduce lawsuits. Like, you're going to the insurance company, and they look like, oh, they have a system that prevents people from coming into the building. If no one's in the building, no one can sue you if something bad happens in the building. Perfect.
Yes. By the way, our building that I work in full-time also has this horrible system. And literally 2 weeks ago, someone walked into our office, stole someone's wallet, and walked out. So, useful.
And
very
plus,
useful.
And you don't want that job anyway. Oh.
Yeah.
Go ahead, James. And everyone knows from watching the Die Hard movies that you don't want that job anyway, because when Hans Gruber shows up, you know, his minions, you're the first guy his minions are going to kill if you're that guy.
That's my point, which is why I qualified it with who is not a police officer. Because if there was actually any danger, These people would be shot immediately in the head, and there would be their entire existence would be pointless because they're just gonna the other guy the bad guys are gonna walk up the elevator then. They're simply to hassle people who want to follow the rules.
That's the definition of TSA.
Yes, exactly. I love
my favorite thing about
TSA. Take your shoes off. Yes, go ahead.
I was going to say, my favorite thing about TSA is when they get mad at you like you're stupid. Like, they do this new one. It must have been United. I think it was United. Where now they have it so you have individual stalls that you're in. And then you actually have to put everything in a bin now. Like, you have to put your bag in a bin now. And she didn't tell me. The lady didn't tell me. So I put my stuff in a bin. I put the bin up. Then I put my bag behind the bin. And she goes, your bag has to go in a bin. And I looked at her and I went, you didn't want to tell me that? Do you think I fly more than like twice a year? Like in the 6 months between when I fly, like things could have changed and I don't always fly United. Like they all assume everyone is an idiot because they don't know what they know, which is how to follow their dumb procedures.
Yes. My bag got pulled out and searched and the woman came up to me angrily and said, sir, why didn't you take this book out of your bag? I said, because it's a
book.
They
make you pull books out now.
It's not an electronic device. It's not food. It's not water. It's a book. All books had to be removed.
Yeah.
What?
The TSA woman last time, she said, we want to see what you're reading. And she meant it informally, like, we want you to take your books out. But I'm like, it made it sound like we want to make sure you don't have dangerous literature being brought on the book or on the plane, which is what it sounded like.
We want to make sure you're not reading How to Take Over a Cockpit with Nothing More Than a Plastic Cup and Your Sheer Will.
And a book.
Yes. By
and a heavy book.
By Habib al-Assan. Yes.
In the same vein, aren't bouncers at bars the same thing? Like, aren't they they're only around because, like, when some drunk asshole thinks he can fight someone, they're there to stop them, to sway people. If somebody comes in with a gun, as we saw with, I'm sure Pulse Nightclub had bouncers, right? If somebody comes in with a gun, the bouncer ain't doing shit. It's really just because fucking Joey over there is going to get drunk. That's what I mean. Because they're assholes.
Right. That is the question's essence. What job exists solely because humans are assholes? Yes, indeed.
Oh, I see.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I like the first answer on this too. The first answer was plumber, and then it's had an edit, and it said thought. It said because human beings have assholes.
That's a stupid Reddit joke. I don't like those.
It's funny. It's amusing. I giggled.
It's funny. It's funny, it's Justin.
Joke.
It's funny.
I giggled.
All right. It's fucking funny. Anything else? Are we ready to end this episode?
Let's go home.
All right. What did we learn this trip, Daniel?
I learned that that internet phrase, you had one job, couldn't apply more than it does to the government right now. Literally, one job, can't do it, massive failure, shut it down, read my lips, no new taxes.
James?
I learned that people have assholes. No. No, I already
knew that.
You
need to go to a doctor
immediately. I definitely already knew that. I learned, I don't know. Fuck, I'm always so bad at this. You ever get I learned that the mid-side is just like college because a lot of times at the end of the lecture, they ask any questions and I'm like, I don't know where to start. We covered so much, such a breadth of material. I can't focus on any one part to ask a question or tell you what I learned. So that's what I learned, is that I'm bad at this part of the show.
Could like try to get better. Justin. You could try to get better at that in the future. Like focus on the episode and be like, okay, what am I going to talk about?
Yeah, but if I prepare something ahead of time, then it's just kind of forced. Like, did I really learn that? If I kind of like had it prepared ahead of time, like, oh, this is what I learned.
Do you understand how stand-up comedy works, James? Do you understand how producing
James
a show works?
Too sincere for this part of the show. Because he takes it very seriously. Yes, I like it. It also tells listeners that we didn't rehearse any of this, which I also like. This is all off the cuff. We do very little show prep. It's how you win the internet. Do no prep whatsoever. Justin, what did you learn?
I learned, Daniel, that you are only 50% un-American. You will at least vote for The Rock, but you will not see his movies.
That's right. I look forward to working in The Rock's administration.
He is the people's president.
That's right.
It's either him or Oprah at this point.
Oprah's not going to run. Daniel, take us home.
I will be a director of smelling.
That's just because
he's cooking,
she can't run. She will attempt to become president, though.
Zing! Fat joke. If you learned something this week, other than we're weird, why don't you tell us at The Midside on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, or Facebook, where all of the social medias are housed. More preference this week, I think, for Instagram, right, Justin?
Yeah, I was going to say, if Snapchat survives the week. Although I did hear that from one of my students that I tutor, and I'm assuming they're in the know because they're in high school, apparently Snapchat is rolling back its update because it was universally yelled at. Everyone hated it. You know, the idea that we're going to send you Snapchat decided they were going to give you random feeds of people you've never heard of and have no notoriety at all and show you what they've been snapping in their public stories, which I don't like why they decided that was a good idea. And I guess everyone hated it because it was easier to find that than to find your friends' stories, which is, you know, it's just what we need. We need to dehumanize society even more, that we pay attention to random strangers instead of the people we care about. But I guess to the good of society and the good of high schoolers everywhere, they revolted and hated it. So Snapchat is actually going backwards. So if it survives the week, you can find me on Snapchat at The Midside.
This just affirms my decision never to learn the platform or talk about it at all. So thank you. Good job, me. If you don't want to do that, you can go to the website, themidside.com/podcast, and check out all of the past episodes. It's literally, are we in like 1,000 hours of content or something? It's got to be an insane amount of content at this point. I don't know. Maybe I'm exaggerating our own importance, but it's a lot of us talking about this stuff. So you can go back and listen to all those. You can go to iTunes or Google Play and subscribe. Gets those podcasts delivered directly to your listening device of your choice. While you're there at iTunes, why don't you give us 5 stars? We love our 5-star reviews. We have a perfect 5-star rating so far, and we'd like to keep it that way. So even if you're hating the show, even if you think we're a bunch of insufferable idiots, why don't you click 5 stars and then write insufferable idiots underneath it. We'll love that. It's awesome. If you don't want to do any of that, that's fine. You can subscribe on the Liberty.me feed and get other libertarian shows. Not that we're libertarians necessarily, but we're sympathetic. We like you. You're okay when you're not anarchists. You're great. Love libertarians. Thank you, Liberty.me. And then there's, of course, Patreon. Patreon.com/themidside, where you can give monies to us for producing this show. That is, we produce a show, and then money is deducted from your account only if and only if we produce a show. It's fantastic. So it's not a monthly subscription, as Justin said at the top of the show. It's not a commitment. It's when we produce content, you decide to give us money. It can be any amount of money, any amount of money, which is incredible. We love our Patreon subscribers, and be sure to check out Patreon exclusive review of 1517 to Paris, Clint Eastwood's new movie, in the stream. You can also, while you're a Patreon subscriber, check out our exclusive review of The Last Jedi, as well as other things that are exclusively on Patreon that I don't even know about because I'm not a Patreon subscriber. So thank you. It helps us keep the lights on, etc. If none of that, if you don't want to subscribe on iTunes, you don't want to go to the website, you don't want to go to the store on the website, themidside.com/store, and buy a t-shirt, you don't want to subscribe on Patreon, that's totally fine. We get it. Money is money, and therefore you should keep it. Tell a friend. Tell a friend. That's free. Telling a friend costs you nothing and yet gives us so much. So why don't you this week take a moment to find someone you love and cherish and say, hey, thanks for being in my life. You're a really great human being. And also listen to Welcome to the Midside. I suspect you'll see a little tear roll down their face as you've just given them the greatest gift of all, us. So until next time, we love you and adore you. Goodbye.
This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Day.
Stay the course and fight.